This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Well, that was a surprise. Don't ask how old I am. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and it is my birthday today. Thanks, Dan. It's gloomy out there, so you know that means happy November as well.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. I'm also the author of the books Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, the book Godless, the book The Good Atheist, and Annie Laurie has some books as well, which we'll talk about also. Today is November the 2nd, 2013, and it is, as we now know, Annie Laurie's birthday. Free Thought Radio is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in other parts of the country, Missouri, California, Texas, New York, Michigan, and we also podcast a few days later after the broadcast.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the nation's largest association of non-religious atheists, agnostics, freethinkers. And we are also a state church watchdog. And regular listeners know we've just welcomed our fifth staff attorney. And FFRF does a great deal of free work to help people around the country resolve problems of entanglement between religion and government. We also litigate, and we'll have a new lawsuit next week to announce on Free Thought Radio.
And we'll talk about some of that legal action today about campuses, school campuses. Free thought and secularism are exploding on college and high school campuses. And today we're going to talk with Jesse Galef. He's the communications director for the Secular Student Alliance. The Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Secular Student Alliance have been partnering to help students to form free thought clubs on campuses. And Jesse's going to tell us what is happening on that front in the second half of today's show.
And our FFRF attorneys are helping students who need legal help starting their clubs. And for news this week, a new billboard that FFRF has put up, or it's actually a recycled billboard that FFRF has put up, is getting some traction. An atheist grandfather wants his grandchildren to enjoy life now because there is no afterlife, as Huffington Post put it. And we need to thank our octogenarian lifetime member, Wayne Hensler, who's a farmer in Wisconsin, for purchasing this billboard. And it's up in Janesville, Wisconsin, which is south of Madison, Wisconsin, for a month. And it says, enjoy life now. There is no afterlife. And Wayne paid for the same message two or three times, including in the Waterloo area. And we think that's a really cute story, that this is a legacy for his grandchildren. But we also like to point out that one of the greatest disservices of religion is that it misdirects human energies from this world, which is, after all, our only world that we know of and can prove, to some highly improbable imaginary afterlife. So yes, enjoy life now. And also, take a moment to think that the only afterlife that should concern any of us is leaving our descendants a secure and pleasant future. And that's a lot to bite off these days.
So today is your birthday, Annie Laurie, November the 2nd. So happy birthday.
Well, and I have to say happy birthday, Ian, too. That's my twin. Can't have a birthday without him.
That's right. Your twin who's a foot taller than you. So. Your name is, you know, when I first met you, I accidentally called you Annie years ago, and then I was quickly corrected. Your name is not Annie. It's a double name, Annie Laurie. And so Why did your parents pick that name for you?
Well, that was actually my mother's choice, and people of her generation, people in their 80s and 90s, do remember the ballad, Annie Laurie. It was very popular in the Crimean War, and it actually was a poem by a love-struck man that he wrote that poem, I think, in the 1700s. I forgot to look this up.
In Scotland, and
wrote one verse, and then I think it was an English woman, actually, in the 1800s who added more verses and set it to music. And so my mother, of course, was very familiar with this ballad growing up, but she also had read in Mark Twain's autobiography that his childhood sweetheart's name was really Annie Laurie, and that was apparently the prototype for his Becky Thatcher in Tom Sawyer.
Well, here's appropriately a Scottish singer named Alex Beaton singing the first verse of Annie Laurie.
Maxwell Tunbridge are bonny where early falls the dew, and it's there that Annie Laurie keep me her promise true, keep me her promise true, which ne'er forgot will be, and for bonny Annie Laurie I'd lay me doon and dee.
So that's the first and the best verse of the song Annie Laurie. And when I was working on the anthology Women Without Superstition that has about 50 women freethinkers in it that I edited, I ran across an interesting trivia fact from Freethought history, which is that when Albert Parsons was being led to the gallows, he was one of the four martyrs from the Haymarket bombing. He was falsely accused. Everyone knows today they were innocent.
In Chicago.
He was singing his favorite song, Annie Laurie. And so for almost at least a decade after, many of the free-thinking and or anarchist groups would begin their meetings with a rendition of the song Annie Laurie. So just a complete coincidence, but an interesting free thought connection.
The modern-day Annie Laurie is no less of an activist. In 1980, the Freedom From Religion Foundation made a film called A Second Look at Religion. And part of that film is an interview of Annie Laurie Gaylor. It was conducted outside at the University of Wisconsin. And let's listen to the 24-year-old Annie Laurie, just as she graduated from college. She was just as passionate then as she is today about the harm of religion to women.
Annie Laurie Gaylor is a recent graduate of the University of Wisconsin in Madison, an award-winning journalist in college. She now is the publisher and editor of a new feminist monthly newspaper. She has been an activist for women's rights since she was in junior high school.
I understand you're a third-generation freethinker. How has that affected you?
I call myself a third-generation freethinker. I feel fortunate that I was brought up in a household free from religion, because I've seen the pain that religion has brought friends of mine when they've tried to cut the umbilical cord. Even though I was skeptical about the Bible, I was shocked at what I read about its treatment of women, and I think that it would outrage people who've been brought up to believe the Bible is a good book.
You said women would be outraged. Why would they be, Annie Laurie?
Women would be outraged if they read the Bible because it's one gigantic put-down of women. From the first chapters of Genesis, the Bible establishes that women are unclean, that they're inferior to men, and that men should rule over them. The favored version of creation says that woman is created from man's spare rib, that she's an appendage to man. Women in the Bible are owned by men and can be sold into slavery by men. They can even be sacrificed. We've all read about the story of Abraham, who nearly sacrifices his son Isaac to please God. But how many of us have heard of the story of Jephthah and his daughter, whom he does actually sacrifice? We haven't heard this story because women and their lives in the Bible are not considered important. Women can even be raped with impunity in the Bible.
Is there a particular Bible passage that bothers you the most?
The most grisly passage in the Bible deals with a concubine whose master throws her into a crowd of unruly men in order to save his own skin. She's raped all night long, and then she's found at his doorpost dead the next morning. Instead of mourning her or feeling any guilt for his cowardly act in sacrificing her, the man cuts her up into 12 pieces and starts a war. The message of the Bible is clear that she was only a piece of his property and that if he causes her death, that's all right. The Bible sanctions men to have concubines. Men could also use their bondswomen sexually. Wise King Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines, so that the Bible also allows polygamy. Men could have as many wives as they wanted, but women could only marry one man.
But these things that you've mentioned now have just been the Old Testament. What did Jesus have to say?
Jesus upheld every jot and tittle of the Mosaic Law, which gives provisions for multiple marriage. He tells a parable about 10 virgins all waiting for the same bridegroom, and he doesn't express any disapproval of this at all.
What else does the Bible say about marriage?
The Bible has some grossly unfair rules about marriage. One of the first rules about marriage is that a woman must be a virgin on her wedding night. If she's not, her father and the men of the village are supposed to stone her to death. A man does not need to be a virgin. Another grossly unfair rule is that a man can divorce his wife by just simply handing her a bill of divorcement. She can't protest. She can't herself divorce her husband, even if he's beating her or there are any other circumstances like that. In the New Testament, Jesus does not do anything to make this inequity better. He says there shall be no divorce unless the woman is an adulteress. If the man's an adulterer, she can't divorce him.
Annie Lloyd, clarify something for me. Just what does the Bible say about abortion?
Ironically, the Bible doesn't say anything about abortion at all. It's totally silent on the subject. Instead, you'll find passages such as, their infant shall be dashed in pieces, and their women with child shall be ripped up. This hardly promotes respect for life. There is a church that cites 5 passages in the Bible that it claims are anti-abortion, but the passages are all similar to, behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. This is hardly persuasive. What you will find in the Bible that is ammunition against abortion rights is that women are supposed to suffer when they're pregnant. They're supposed to bring forth children in agony, and this is what promotes the anti-abortion ideology.
Well, what about the other women in the Bible?
Women in the Bible are basically evil. There are only 2 books that are named for women. Ruth, who is the ultimate passive woman. She acts as a doormat in order to win a second husband. And then there's Esther, who's responsible for killing 75,000 people, and that's why she's honored. The only feminist in the Bible is Queen Vashti, who is quickly dethroned when she refuses to subject herself to her husband and display herself before a mob of drunken companions at a dinner. And this is the only honorable woman in the Bible that I found.
What do you think women should be doing about this sexist book?
I think that women and men should read the Bible so that they have firsthand acquaintanceship with what it says about women. They should judge this book on its merits like any other book. And I think that they'll find that a fair-minded person will not want the Bible to be invoked in any of our laws about women. The Bible has tremendous impact on women's lives today because the Bible teaches that women are inferior, and 40%, nearly 40% of the population in America believes that this Bible is literally true word for word. Therefore, fighting the Equal Rights Amendment and equal rights for women in general has become a religious crusade.
And that was Sheila Thompson conducting the interview of 24-year-old Annie Lloyd Gaylor.
And that is from A Second Look at Religion, and that's on FFRF's YouTube channel. And I later was asked to turn a bunch of feminist columns about the Bible into a book, Woe to the Women, the Bible Tells Me So, which is offered by FFRF. And so you can don't have to read the Bible and be masochistic to find out why it's so harmful to women.
Stay tuned for our interview with Jesse Galef of the Secular Student Alliance, which is a group that's partnering with the Freedom From Religion Foundation to help students form free thought secular groups on college and high school campuses. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Lloyd Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. Thank you.
protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Today, as we mentioned, is Annie Laurie Gaylor's birthday, and another freethinker celebrating a birthday this week is Greg Graffin. Greg Graffin is co-founder of the punk rock band Bad Religion. He was born on November the 6th, 1964. He actually got a PhD. He's very smart, from Cornell University in zoology. Graffin co-founded the punk rock band Bad Religion in 1980. And along with performing and recording with Bad Religion, Graffin teaches. He's a professor of life sciences at UCLA. He calls himself a naturalist. In 2006, Graffin co-wrote the book, Is Belief in God Good, Bad, or Irrelevant? With Preston Jones. Graffin wrote, There is only this life. That sounds like the billboard we just talked about, right?
Yeah, there, enjoy life now, there is no afterlife.
Graffin wrote, There is only this life, so live wonderfully and meaningfully.
Well, Halloween has just passed, but religion is still scary. Here is the song God's Love by Bad Religion. And fortunately, this is one punk rock band where you can actually understand the words.
Striking at mental apparitions like a drunk on a vacant street. Silently beset by the hands of time, indelicate in its fury. An aberrant crack is skeletons yield to unrelenting gravity. While viruses prop for helpless victims and suck up rapidly. Tell me where is the love?
What I'm frightened of is that they call it God's love. And ain't that the gospel truth? And that is Greg Graffin, Bad Religion. And he also, it's his birthday coming up this week. He also said, if you can believe in God, then you can believe in anything. It's a gang mentality. And isn't it nice? You could understand all the words. So that's called God's Love, Bad Religion. And actually, for those of us here in Madison, Wisconsin, it's interesting to learn that Gregory Graffin was born in Racine in 1964. So happy birthday, Greg Graffin.
Where is the love in a careless creation? I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're listening to a harpist. Her name is Claire Hamilton, playing the song Annie Laurie. Stay tuned. In the second half of our show, we're going to talk about students free-thinking secular students will be interviewing Jesse Galef, who is the communications director with the Secular Student Alliance.
Is Free Thought Radio with your hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie.
And we have on the phone with us from Ohio, Jesse Galef, as we promised. Jesse Galef is the communications director for the Secular Student Alliance. Before that, he worked with the Secular Coalition for America and with the American Humanist Association. He graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in political science. He was the president of the secular group on that campus. Jesse has a lot of hobbies. He likes to read. Surprise, surprise. A free thinker who likes to read. He likes to break dance, and he likes to play board games. In fact, Jesse and I played at least one game of chess, and I'm not going to mention who won that game. But Jesse, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you, and I'll mention it. Dan won. Dan is fantastic.
Okay, so Jesse, we've been working with you this week, especially Andrew Seidel, wrapping up a victory in Texas. And maybe you want to explain, we have kind of a partnership. FFRF now has a partnership with the Secular Student Alliance before we go into details about this problem that a kid in Texas was not allowed to start a non-religious club in his high school.
Yeah, this is a problem that we run into far too frequently. There's a secular student at a high school who wants to form a club, and the administrators tell them no. Sometimes it's a flat-out refusal that they don't want that kind of thing in their school. Sometimes they accuse the students of trying to form a hate group. And a lot of the time, they just drag their feet. And that's what happened with this case in Texas. Trying to overcome the obstacles and the stonewalling and the, honestly, illegal refusals is pretty time-consuming and can be difficult, and that's why we formed a partnership with the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You guys do a lot of great legal work and have the resources and really the knowledge to help us out whenever there's a case like this, and so we saw it being put go into action in really dramatic effect this past week, I guess, is when it got resolved down in Texas.
Well, so this started 6 months ago when high school senior named Nick Montana contacted the Secular Student Alliance from he goes to James Bowie High School, and they had refused him the right to start a club. Is that right? He contacted you.
Yeah. Down in Austin, which is the liberal part of Texas, but still not apparently accepting enough of non-believers.
Well, it's liberal liberal in Texas terms, right?
Right. This is true. As you said, I'm here in Ohio, and in Columbus, I like to refer to it as the Austin of Ohio, a blue dot in a red state.
Yeah, we always think of Austin as being like Madison. You know, it's a state capital, lots of lakes, lots of liberals, lots of music.
But still, even with that more progressive bent, more accepting bent, you would think, Nick had a lot of trouble getting his group started. It took 6 months of the principal telling him that he was delayed, and, I have a lot of emails, and I haven't gotten to a request yet. And while Nick watched, he sent in his request with the Constitution, and he had a faculty advisor, and two other groups asked for official recognition and were approved while Nick waited. And Nick decided not to wait any longer. A faculty member told him that it was okay for him to start meeting unofficially, have gatherings, get some pizza, put up flyers. And the principal called him in and said that he wasn't allowed to meet yet. He hadn't been officially approved, and suspended the group indefinitely, saying that no, the group, not only was it not recognized, it was indefinitely suspended, not allowed at all. So, and that's when Nick contacted us, and the SSA and Freedom From Religion Foundation got involved.
So I think we can name this principal in Austin. Principal Stephen Kane is his name. And So the stonewalling had gone on, and then I think that Andrew Seidel, one of our FFRF staff attorneys, was contacted by you and Nick. Was it a week ago?
Yeah, I think it was very,
I think it was last week ago Thursday. And so then
We'd already tried to talk some sense into the Principal Kane. We usually have a, in my opinion, quite polite and friendly letter explaining the law and why students want to form a club, why it's not a hate group, why it shouldn't be offensive or controversial. And that did not do the trick. And that's when Andrew and other staff attorneys with FFRF started sending emails and calls. I don't know exactly what happened being not on the calls, but it worked.
Yeah, I think it was like 4 working days later. So that was this week. They finally relented and told Nick, yes, you have a right to have an atheist or secular club on the high school campus.
And it's not that that the principal realized he had the right. My understanding is the attorneys told him, the school attorneys told him that he had to. It wasn't that he has a change of heart and now understands. I think I understand this to be a rather begrudging acceptance of the club. Is that accurate?
Yes, and where the principal was the problem, and you had to go over his head.
Yeah,
so, and that is
that
often
can take
common.
6 months of stonewalling and delays, and as soon as the Freedom From Religion Foundation starts trying to draw attention to it, 4 days later, it gets approved. This is the sort of story we need to get out to more administrators and more schools, that the law isn't on their side, and that it just takes a short amount of time and a little attention from somebody with legal knowledge to snap them into place.
Well, their legal counsel probably advised them that they could be liable for a very expensive losing lawsuit when they hear from a group like ours that does take legal action.
Yeah, and I think I appreciate that it doesn't actually have to go to court, that once that implication is made that the school would lose, and I think the school attorneys knew that it was pretty obviously a losing case. The First Amendment and Equal Access Act are clear on it. But as I said, this is exactly how we envisioned the partnership going. When a student can't get a group formed on his own and our first attempts fail, to have the Freedom From Religion Foundation step in and have the school, to use an expression, see the light. It's very encouraging and makes us feel great about working with you.
Yeah, well, and it makes us feel good at FFRF, and I know Andrew Seidel was very pleased, and we hope that Nick is going to have full steam ahead and no more problems. But why don't we go into what that law is? Because there's something called the Equal Access Act, and it's a federal law, and it was passed by Congress in the late 80s, I believe it was, and it said, if you allow non-academic clubs to meet in your school, you cannot, quote-unquote, discriminate against religious or political groups. The pressure was really coming from kids who wanted to use public schools to organize Bible clubs. But
that's what I love, yeah.
And then the Supreme Court took that case.
Mergins.
It was the Mergins case. It was argued by the ACLJ, which is the Pat Robertson's legal arm. FFRF was very much opposed to this. In the old days, you did not have religion in schools in any way.
After our clubs.
Yeah. And so, but if you're going to have Bible clubs, then clearly you have to have the right of free thought clubs to meet. But it is a continuing problem. And Dan, you were just, we were just opening up a back issue of Free Thought Today from 1996. And tell us what
you found. Well, I just happened to notice yesterday a story from 1996. Adam Butler in Alabama. The same thing happened, Jesse. Adam Butler was a high school student near Birmingham who wanted to start an atheist club on a high school campus, and the principal said, there will be no atheist club on this campus. And same thing. They dragged their feet, and he tried this and that, and then the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Alabama ACLU sent a letter to the school, and surprise, surprise, he formed an atheist club in 1996 on the campus in Birmingham. So this has been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah, this kind of censorship. Well, the Mergins decision was in the early 90s, so it would make sense that we started seeing problems immediately with the fairness of this. So do you have any idea how many? I didn't look up our statistics, but you must get this complaint all the time.
We do. And at the moment, we have 52 high school groups, 400-something. I can't keep track of the exact number. It changes too frequently, but over 400 groups, 52 of them are in high schools, and those are the ones that succeeded. I know there are usually a handful that are in the process of being worked out, and that's our high school specialist, Andy Cheadleford, working on the administrators and trying to help the students form the clubs. But if we didn't see so many administrators dragging their feet and violating the law, we wouldn't have formed a partnership with FFRF and tried to get more legal support. It happens too much.
Yeah,
although sometimes it doesn't need to take to go this far. There's another case that you guys helped us out with in Bloomfield Hills, I think. Is that...
That's right.
Ring a bell?
Yes, in Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
That was last week also.
Yeah, and that one, it actually worked out quite well. The student is required to get a faculty advisor, and that's a pretty standard requirement at schools. But every single faculty member declined and said that they wouldn't sponsor the Secular Student Alliance Club. And that's where, legally, the Equal Access Act... some readings say that the school needs to either provide a sponsor or they can accept an off-campus advisor or waive the requirement altogether. And so we sent letters together trying to talk with the school about what to do next. And I really appreciate the Freedom from Religion Foundation. You guys sent out an email to your members in the area. We sent out letters to members that we've had in the area, and we managed to find the perfect advisor for the group. Hassan, who used to run the group at Wayne State University.
Oh, that is perfect.
So this is a college student who ran a group, a Secular Student Alliance. He graduates, and he's a member of the community. And when the time comes, he steps up and helps this high school student who wants to form a club.
So, yeah,
we
sent out an alert to our members in the area saying if you can spare a couple hours after school once a week, you can be a school advisor. Now, the other pitch that we give to principals when this happens, and it is not all that uncommon that you get all the faculty refusing to be a sponsor of a Free Thought Student Club, is we have said, well, the principal should step up to the plate and the principal should be the advisor. And I think, I mean, come on. But they certainly, it is used often as a way to put the brakes on student clubs. And picking on people who are a lot younger than you are is always, in my opinion, bullying. So, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
I'm Dan Barker. We're talking with Jesse Galef, Communications Director of the Secular Student Alliance, which helps to organize and support free thought, secular, atheist, agnostic, humanist groups on campuses all over America. After the break, I want to ask Jesse a couple questions about the history of the SSA. So stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us from Columbus, Ohio, Jesse Galef, who is Communications Director of the Secular Student Alliance, which started in 2000, hired its first staff in 2003. Jesse was brought out in 2010. It has 52 chapters in high schools and over 400 in colleges. And I understand that
400 is total.
Okay, so excuse me, nearly 350 on college campuses. And one of them is the AHA, Atheist, Humanist, and Agnostics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And Jesse, during the commercial, you are reminding me about this very charming Halloween display that AHA is sponsoring right now on Bascom Hill here in Madison, Wisconsin. Do you want to describe that?
Yeah, we're really proud of the AHA group at UW-Madison right around there. So the event that they just put up on campus is a God graveyard. Hmm. They put up 200 tombstones with pictures of gods that are no longer worshipped and signs that say, I'm reading the sign right now, God graveyard. Here lie the graves of thousands of dead gods, once worshipped by entire civilizations, now only myths. How much longer will the gods of today last?
Mm-hmm.
And
really,
I just love the message that they're promoting.
And it's, of course, Bascom Hill is very photogenic place to put up displays. And so this one is going to go into the history books. I think it's a great idea.
Well, that's where you were interviewed.
We were just talking.
I was just saying, we played an interview of Annie Laurie right there on that campus a few years ago.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I understand most of Madison is very photogenic, much like Chapel Hill, where I went to school. But we want more and more groups to do this. I know the University of North Carolina Greensboro did a similar event, a God Graveyard. And this is what I love about grassroots movements, like the secular student movement, that when one group has a good idea, it can spread. We don't have to come up with most of the ideas ourselves because we have 400 student groups, all creative and enthusiastic, coming up with ideas like this that everybody else can replicate and change their communities.
Yeah, it's a good way to make people smile and think at the same time. Now, we were talking with you, Jesse, about the partnership between FFRF and the Secular Student Alliance. And one of the most common complaints that we're working on together is letting students start free thought clubs on high schools. And you reminded me of another case that we were involved in, an interesting case. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, that was Sarah Henry down in Floyd Central High School. They had a lot of trouble starting a group, and the reason it came to mind was, I believe you mentioned, Annie Laurie, that often the none of the faculty will sponsor a club.
What state was
that? That's a good question. I want to say Indiana.
I think Indiana. I don't remember either. But so they won't find. That's a good way to censor the club, except that we think the principal should then step up.
Yeah, but, and the reason that sometimes the faculty won't step forward. Usually there is somebody who will be willing, but this is an example at Florida Central where we have a good reason that faculty are scared, that the advisor of the club was actually temporarily docked their pay and had negative marks on their performance review for what the principal described as engaging in controversial behaviors. This is a school where the principal tried to block the group, and the Secular Student Alliance and Freedom from Religion Foundation told them that they couldn't block the group. And instead, the school tried threatening the teacher, saying that they couldn't be promoted, that they would get paid less. After more interventions, they got their pay restored and the negative marks removed. But I think that a lot of faculty feel like it would be a bad career move. Sometimes they're explicitly told that, and sometimes they just hear stories like this. And they need to know that organizations like FFRF and the SSA are here to defend them if their principals ever try to pull that again.
Yeah, and we did get some satisfaction for that teacher. But wow, is that ever a reprisal?
Well, because the students want to form this hate group and sit around and eat babies and subvert American principles. What are these groups actually doing?
Well, a lot of the time it's discussions around their worldview. These are students. Often they are self-described atheists. Sometimes they're just questioning. Sometimes they don't know what they believe. Even some Christians come to these clubs to discuss things from a non-religious point of view to find out what they believe. And we're very we emphasize free discussion and free inquiry a lot in the groups. But
and don't you have some of them are like book clubs? And also, there's a lot of volunteerism, isn't there?
No, and that's the thing. They take the secular worldview that they discuss and try to live those values, educating people about science and the importance of separation of church and state, but also community service efforts without any of the religious trappings. That's something that we really encourage students to do I don't just want to say show that they're good people, but to actually be good people. I think that's an important part of being a student, a citizen, and a human being.
Now, you were saying, Jesse, that there are some new initiatives that the Secular Student Alliance is engaging in. We're almost out of time. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, the Secular Safe Zone is something we're very proud of, recruiting allies in student communities to get some training and learn how to stand up against anti-atheist bullying. This is something, even if there's not a student club, we could really use teachers, librarians, anybody in a student community to know how to identify anti-atheist bullying and be there to stop it and support it. And this program just launched a couple months ago, and it's gaining steam, gaining attention. And we would really love as many people as we can to take the training and identify as Secular Safe Zone allies. And more information about that is at secularsafezone.org. It's something that everybody who works with students can do, and it can really make all the difference in the world to students to have somebody they know is on their side.
And we've got about 1 minute left. Isn't there another initiative SSA is doing?
Yeah, we're excited. The Rapid Response Organizer is a new position and program we're trying to really highlight some of these controversies. We've mentioned some of the partnerships with FFRF, but there are more and more stories where the student gives up because they feel alone. And we're hiring a Rapid Response Organizer to get some more attention and let these students know they're not alone and that they have allies in the secular movement. And so more information about that will be on our website at secularstudents.org.
So if you're in the Madison area, be sure to go look at that great cemetery of dead religions on Bascom Hill at the end of or at the beginning of campus in Madison. And thank you so much, Jesse Galef, Communications Director of the Secular Student Alliance, for all your work.
My pleasure.
It's
thank you.
Delightful working with you.
Speaking of dead religions, here's the band Bad Religion as we go out today. Our producer and engineer is Dave McCann, and our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Find out more about our show, go to ffrf.org/news/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or just join us. All the information is there at our website. Get your 10 issues of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. You can also get that as a PDF if you prefer. You can also phone 1-800-335-4021 to request more information. And we have a new building fund. We have a new lawsuit next week. We would really appreciate your support. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday